Hangar on Art is a radio program that investigates, experiments, inquires into art practices and critical theory as an extension to the Hangar Exhibitions, Residencies, Education and Research Program. The program sets a dialogue of a wide range of relationships which are established between artists, theorists, curators and researchers. Hangar on Art will feature thoughtful reflections, creative interventions, and thematic analysis.
Simon Jami, thank you so much for being here. I'm trying to be a journalist, but I'm not. But we're all trying to be many things at the same time. But I think what we're trying to engage also, and we met each other at Dakar Biennale, and after that we also invited to come to Hangar, and you started a program quite important for us because it started off one of our missions that was really looking at how can we work with art and education with young people. And that was fundamental because you see some of the young people now, after some years, they actually following their path as artists. So I think it's fundamental also to think about your practice, curating as an act of generosity, that you take your time also to give. And so looking at that, to your practice, coming from that perspective, I mean, there's much more to add to what you've been contributing to the artistic panorama. But I think one of the questions is, what do you think is the role of education in curating and in creating art practices, especially in the South? Or in the diaspora South, what I call the diaspora South in Europe. Yeah,
I don't know about education. I would call it awakening, because in every country in the world, you have an educational system. And if I started to build my workshops, it's because I was not really happy with the educational system. The educational system is something where people are formatted to give the answers they asked. I remember when I was training my own kids, I told them about Sartre and Aron. Sartre they knew, Aron they never heard of, but Aron had an aggregation in philosophy the same year Sartre failed. And since Aron thought that Sartre was much better than him, he trained Sartre for a year to be stupid, which means to answer a question he was asked like a stupid student. And of course, during that year, Sartre learned not to ask too many questions, but to answer. And he was received first at the aggregation. And what I would tell to my kids, but you remember Sartre, you don't remember Aron. So I think that what education, a classic education does, is that it prevents people from asking questions. It's true in the North, but it's even more so in the South, where a student and a pupil is just asked to say what he is supposed to say. And the teacher would not let him the freedom to say why, because if he's why, he won't have the A+. So we have a system where the people with a lot of grades are probably the most stupid, because they've been asking simple questions. Anyone can ask a simple question. Ask, when was that one dead? It's written. When this war happened, it's written. When you ask why this war was happening, the teacher might tell you, we're not here for that. You're here to give me the dates. So I think education as an awakening, as something that would come complementary to the system, is crucial. When I was doing my things, traveling in Africa and elsewhere. Yeah. I was surprised by the little faith the kids had in whatever they thought they were. As far as the book they've read, I've always read more books than they did, because every country reads certain little part of what should be read when they read. The critical thinking, the I, was always missing. And I'll always remember this this kid who came to me talking for all the kids. It was in Kampala, at Makerere University. He came to me after a week where they sweat and suffer and cried. He told me, well, Mr. Njami, I'm talking in the name of all my companion. But the fact is that from the very day you ask us to speak, and we're not trained for that. We were never asked what we think. We're never asked about our feelings. We're supposed to just repeat what was said. So this is why the first days were a bit silent, because we didn't know what to tell you. When you would tell us, now you speak, tell me what you think about this. So, yes, of course, we can't destroy the classic educational system. We can just try to make it better. But it's obvious that it's not in schools that people learn how to be humans, or how to think, or how to look at the world in a different manner. So education in that sense, I think it's Levinas who was defining it like that. He was defining education as bringing light out. And this is how I see it. It's not obscuring whatever potential is there, but it's to let it out. And in order to let it out, you don't have to impose it. You have to dig, and you have to create that space of freedom that kids would take and invest.
Yeah, because many times education, as is experienced by us in formal education, it's really a power relationship, and it conditions us to think a certain way. And I really like this idea of, you know, is we have to change this way of thinking of what is education, really questioning that, and the structures of power that they impose on us, on our mind, on our body, and our spirit, and this consciousness, and also looking at it as an ecology of care and as a practice of love. And I think that act, you also, it's very embedded in your inner practice as a curator, and also thinking of power structures as education, the art world conceals on it. And where do you see this power moving on the global art worlds, you know, having in consideration what you already talk of these structures of awakening? But where do you see it going?
Yeah, my position I've always been, and I think this is Derrida who said it once. He was in a conference in Jerusalem, and he said, I have no pity for the victims. And of course, it created a kind of a huge array, and people were like, what? How can he say that? But I totally agree with what Derrida was saying, because of course he was not putting aside that the victimhood. But what he was saying, that it's so much happened that to be a victim may become a quiet corner, and people start to become professional victims instead of trying to find the weapons. So something that might sound an easy space can become a comfort zone, when people, the only thing they're producing is this victimization thing. So when we look at the global state of affair, I've always tend to love resistance rather than activism, because I think resistance is action, activism is gesture, and we cannot change the world if we want to copy the world. Because if we think that the world outside of us is more powerful, we're giving it more power. So we have to create those places of resistance. There was a time, you were not born, where the great debates were around center and periphery. And I would tell to kids, I would tell to myself, the center is where I am. So everything around me is peripheric. So I don't see how people in Africa and Latin America would call themselves back then the periphery. The periphery of what? There are things that have been done in the West. There are things that are dying in the West. But there are things that could be done in the South. Let's call it the South. using the failures of the West and using also this genuine power to do things. I've been curating shows in Africa, and well, my hands were dusty, my clothes were dusty, etc., etc. But I could always find solutions. When I'm curating a show in DC, I'm sitting on an armchair and telling people what to do. When I want the color of the wall to be changed, they change it immediately. If I'm not happy, they rechange it. When I'm in Africa, I need to think very strongly of what I want. And I think that as far as my curatorial practices are concerned, Africa always helped me to remain a curator, not to be a civil servant or a fonctionnaire, but always to resolve problems where they were and for what they were. And I think that curating, as far as I'm concerned, is to address issues in the place where they have to be addressed. An exhibition cannot be the same. You cannot curate the same exhibition in Dakar, in Lubumbashi, or anywhere else, because you're talking about ecology. Ecology, from its origin, is the house. It's like home. And people tend to talk about plants and trees and nature, but it's the whole human ecosystem. We have a house and we have to take care of the house, but you don't take care of that house the same way in Dakar or in Mumbai, because the principle of taking care of the house are the same, but the tools are not the same. You don't apply the same recipes. You don't, when it's raining, you don't build houses the same way than when it's not raining. And it's very important and critical for me to always think, well, we call that exhibition, I call that problems, but problem in a mathematical sense, not in the wrong sense that it's used, as if a problem was negative. In math, a problem is a question to be solved. And for me, an exhibition must ask a question and not solve it because we don't have the means, but at least decipher, deconstruct it in order to give a couple of tools for people to look at different directions. So to fight the globalization, as Omi Baba put it, there's nothing but the local. Hegel said, we think through the words we're using. I was doing a masterclass in Cameroon, and there's a moment I ask people to tell me stories, and I told them, you French will never be good enough to tell the stories you want the way you want to tell them, so tell them in the language you master the most. And one of them dared, and of course the result was there. I did not quite understand what she was saying, but I could see that she was living and she was vibrating in a different manner. And when the others were talking in French, there was a mistake in every sentence, and I'm very, very hard on mistakes. So if we don't use the language in which we dream, we're slaves, because we're using somebody else's language. And we're using tools we don't master. And how can we win a war if we're not mastering the weapons we're using? So when we talk about this imbalance of the world, I think that the only thing that colonization really achieved was this kind of a brainwashing to make people believe they were inferior. And you can see that now. I see that in the post-colonial thing. I see that in the Afro thing, etc. If people want to prove that they exist, I always have a question to myself. To whom do they want to prove that I exist? And for me, the only way to prove that I exist is to talk or to do things, to dance, to drink. I'm not here to prove to anyone that I exist. And when I meet kids, the first thing I tell them that is that they're not here to prove anything to me, because they can't. But maybe there are things they want to prove to themselves. And for that, they will need to find the right tools. And this is where the education we're talking about comes. Because when you know where you want to go, maybe then you might find the right tools. But before finding the tools, you need to know. You need to have an idea of yourself and your aspirations. and your aspirations must not be targeted into proving to some people who doesn't care who you are.
It's fascinating, especially to, you know, when you talk about mastering our language and the language that we have to dream not to be slaves, and it connects to what we were talking about, these systems that they somehow they are there to make us develop, but they oppress us. And it's really about finding a self-position in place and asking a question. Do you think the artists in the art world, especially coming from the South, they are asking this question?
I think, as everywhere else, I tend to look at the South like any other place. So there are artists who are trying to ask the question. There are artists who are trying to make money. And there are artists who are trying to mimic the question they think they're supposed to ask. I know artists who are more African than whatever we could define as Africa, because there's a clientele for that. And I know others who are really trying to build their own language and to construct. So nothing special there. I'm not interested in the African Africans, because those I will never show in my shows or talk to, because they're obviously not talking to me or to their people. But I'm interested in those who are asking questions. And to ask a question, and this is also something I've found in many places, to ask a question doesn't mean to spell a question. It means to make a work that is asking a question. To ask a question is a form. It's a color, it's a concept, it's not just the question. It's not enough to spread a question. It's when you're an artist, you have to, the question must be encompassed in the work, because a work should be quote-unquote silent. At times I'm visiting studios, etc., and the artists would tell me they want me to explain. I say no. I look at the work. If I have question, I might ask you, but I don't need explanation, because when a work in a museum 10,000 kilometers from here, would be the artist there to explain? I think art doesn't explain, it says. And the artists I'm interested in are those who are saying, not those who are trying to explain things, because even philosophy is not trying to explain things, so why should art do? Art is an expression. Art is a form of translating the untranslatable, and it translated it into forms, into sensations, into a certain physicality that doesn't go first through the brain, but through some other part of our consciousness.
And it's also a question, he also puts the question, you know, why the artists or the art world, why is it nowadays the global art world so obsessed with nation and so obsessed with pinpointing who we are and where we come from? And I think you answer to that in terms of deconstructing the sense of identity and place, because somehow, as you explained, it's not a language that we dream, it's a language that is being set as a system of oppression, but sometimes sold as a system of freedom. And I think this resistance kind of act of being an artist, that you actually do not need to position yourself apart from a place of being free and having ecology of care, as you said, you know, in terms of your place and identity, of having a kind of freedom there and embracing.
I think that the works tells everything. I mean, when I'm giving a lecture, I don't need to say I'm from Cameroon or from Africa, etc. It's obvious. So I'd rather talk about Switzerland, about Brazil, about places, just to point out that this point of departure is obvious, so we have to go beyond it. There's an African invention that people are not very much aware of, and I think that if people are aware, they would see how they can contaminate the language. It's called the blue note. When the Africans were, they found themselves in the new world, so-called new world, there was a certain way of writing music, and they couldn't write their own music in that form that they were given. So they invented a note. They invented a supplementary note that was called a blue note, that could allow them to perform what they were performing. And when people are complaining about the positionality of their roots or the place they came from, I mean, this blue note invented the modern music. I mean, Bach, whom I like a lot, might have invented all the canon of the classic music, but the African invented all the canon of the contemporary music. So again, it goes back to what I call education. It goes back to what people like Bob Marley would say: if you don't know your history, there's no way. So instead of being into this complaining mode, well, we've done a couple of good things, and maybe we should think, when we talk about the global world, where is that blue note that we could bring in this contemporaneity? And I think that the artists I like the most, the thinkers I like the most, are those who are bringing that blue note, which is not the repetition of all the notes that existed, but with something different that all of a sudden make the whole partition different.
It kind of takes me to some writings of Bell Hook, All About Love, where she actually mentions that love is an option, and it's not a noun and is a verb. Do you see your practice as a curator on resonating with that?
Well, there are certain words I use carefully, but I like the word sharing, because sharing means truth, sharing means equality, sharing means there's no, even if Hegel stated the master and slave as a paradox, and maybe the slaves should know it a bit more, is that the master needs slaves to be a master, slaves don't need a master to be slaves. So the Hegelian paradox was that maybe the slaves are more master than the masters. No, sharing. And you're quoting Hooks, but I can quote Baldwin about what things can do. Baldwin once told me, if somebody would have told me that Pushkin or Dumas had some black blood, it wouldn't have added a portion of rice on my table, but it would have saved my youth, because I was told we did nothing. Nobody told me that those people that were praised ever by everyone, that those people were my people. So we need that sharing, and this is why it's important to... To me, at least, it's important to talk to young people before they get trapped into this kind of self-indulgence or self-hatred at time, no matter how it comes out. But for me, it's always whether self-indulgence or self-hatred, to give them the tool not to fall into the trap of hatred. Hatred for themselves and hatred for the other. I mean, should a young Jew hate a young German today? Of course, we know what Germany have done to the Jews, etc. But should a young African hate a young Portuguese or a young French today? I think no, because they have much more in common than their grand-grandparents. They're all living in a very scattered position where the definition of the self is confused. I mean, when I was in South Africa, when they opened South Africa, what was interesting there, consider it as it was a potential laboratory, is that people didn't know where to stand, even physically, anymore. When apartheid stopped, the white didn't know how to react. As white people, the black didn't know how to react as white people, the Indian, etc., because you could see that those borders were kind of a comfort, because you have less questions. You say, okay, I'm black, so this is what it means. I'm white, this is what it means. And all of a sudden, all that is gone. You cannot just define yourself as a black or as a white, because all those people, they hold a South African passport, so they're all from the same country, no matter what the history were. But if they don't think, if they don't bring the blue note, the thing is going to explode. And I think that is just a metaphor for the whole world. We need to create that blue note, and we need to share. I have something I give to you. I was asked once why I was going to Africa to talk to the kids, why somebody like me would get there. And my answer is that they give me so much. I talk to 20 kids, and I see one growing. It's like, planting some seeds and seeing the result immediately. That's the greatest gift they can give me, because they're proving to me that they're alive and that I have something to do. I'm useful somehow. So, yes, this is the job we have to share. And I guess sharing is love, but I don't know. I'll keep that for later. But we have to share as humbly, but as normally as we can. When I'm sharing with those kids, I never pretend I speak their language. I'm their age. I haven't read the books I've read. I haven't been in the countries I've been. But I bring that on the table. I say, this is me. Give me you. And this is what sharing is about. It's not pretending you're not who you are, speaking a language you don't speak just to pretend that you're in the same. No, say, okay, this is me, this is you. We're different, but let's do something together. This is the most honest way of sharing.
Thanks so much for sharing all your thinkings and ways of seeing, creating and seeing what is this awakening that we call education, and challenging notions of who you are or who we are as artists, as creators, and playing that blue note. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me here. It's nice to see how hunger is growing, because hunger is like a baby that is growing and getting stronger every day. So.
Yeah.
Long life to hunger.
And it was really important, the relationship, like especially with you creating one of the programs with young people, and that we could also see results coming out. And is what you said, it's so important that that happens, and that they get out of certain constraints that the education system, even in the arts, kind of creates, or wanting to fit on an art role.
And then you get trapped. Self-construction.
Yeah.
That are fake.
Yeah. And we can see he had great results, and it's, thank you so much.
Good. But a luta continua.
A luta continua. Thank you.